If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Fucking shit, isn't he?
He's fucking shit, mate. The thing about it is that he's shit.
Blood, he's fucking shit.
It's Sunday, which means it's time for the front three with me, Adam Bolt, with the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
It's good Sundays.
Statman Davis here, as always, as well.
Hello, hello, hello.
As is Chris Hennage.
Evening.
We are going to be reviewing all of the Premier League action, as always, on a Sunday. We're also going to be looking at some of the key European fixtures around the continent. And we're also going to finish up by talking about the England squad, which just has been announced for the upcoming international break. But there's only one place to start, Dave, and that is the North London Derby. An exciting game, finishing Arsenal 1, Tottenham 1 at the Emirates Stadium. Plenty of chances for both sides. Harry Kane was back for Spurs, but key players like Ali, Alderweireld and Lamela were all missing, meaning Pochettino opted for an unfamiliar 3-5-2 formation, and it worked pretty well, didn't it, Dave?
Yeah, I think it did. It worked really well. It gave Spurs the extra man at the back, and they completely just played out of Arsenal's press. You know, the first 30 minutes, you'd say, Spurs dominated the game. I don't think it's so unfamiliar. I think Spurs have played this system before, the 3-5-2. I don't think this is the first time, but it was quite funny to watch BT Sport and Rio Ferdinand, Harry Redknapp, and I think Ian Wright just to be like flabbergasted. Oh, they've never played this before. It's going to be rubbish. They need to know what they're doing. But Pochettino is a manager that plans. Pochettino is a manager that you'll know your role as a player down to a T. And I do think, you know, Spurs did very well, but they didn't, in that dominance, they didn't create enough chances. You know, Eriksen drifted well wide and created a few chances from wide areas and across into the box. But Son's movement wasn't good enough for me. Playing off Harry Kane, he should have been moving a lot more to the left, to the right. They were trying to hit diagonals to him quite a lot, but he wasn't getting himself into the space. You know, the one time that he did break the Koscielny tackle, big, big chance, and, you know, Arsenal defended it. But then Arsenal kind of switched it, and they realised that playing a back three, all you do is a counter-attack and you switch it from one side to the other. You have a man over. A brilliant chance for Iwobi when it was 0-0. Should have put the ball in the back of the net, but he didn't. And then obviously the free kick that Arsenal scored. The offside, you know, again, the offside law needs to be revisited because it's too in and out at the moment. You know, you go to that, you freeze frame it when the ball's played in. Obviously, Wimmer's going to have a look over his shoulder, or he would have done before the move, and seen two players behind him. He has to go for that ball, but in fact, the players behind him aren't actually offside, because apparently Sanchez isn't making a play towards the ball, isn't interfering in play. So it's one of those things that needs to be rolled out, because it's confusing for both the fan, both for the manager, and of course for the pundit. But then I think Spurs did quite well to get back into the game. Harry Kane scoring from the penalty spot. He's now scored five of Tottenham's last six goals against Arsenal, so he's absolutely crucial into the game. But I think it was a fair result, 1-1.
Yeah, I think a draw was a fair result, I think you have to say, Chris. As Dave sort of points there, Harry Kane come back, obviously a huge boost for Spurs. And you have to say, despite it being a fourth straight league draw, it was a better result for Pochettino than Wenger. Tottenham obviously maintaining their unbeaten start. And Arsenal missing the opportunity to go top, having created a number of good chances, as Dave said, and in some ways failing to press that home advantage.
November's a funny month for Arsenal as well, though. They have tended to struggle. And I think because of that, any result that's not a win looks a little bit worse than it is. I don't disagree with your evaluation, the question there. I think ultimately, though, it's an instance where it's so difficult because we almost tried to pluck grand ideas from single instances. So just last week we were talking about how brilliant Ozil was against Ludogorets, and now I see people in the flip side of that saying, well, this is clearly why he's not world class, because he doesn't influence a game like this. It feels harsh and wrong to do that. I think that there needs to be more from the Arsenal players at this point. I think, yeah, Tottenham could have been better. I honestly think their bigger issue right now is integrating Janssen. I think he looks a little bit awkward when he plays. And with Kane returning, there's going to be less minutes for him in theory as a consequence of that. So how do you then get him to work and get him to understand his teammates?
I think Kane coming back, obviously. I mean, Spurs looked far better. They looked more fluent going forward with him as the focal point. But I think Janssen works. I think he kind of works as a sub. You know, he comes on, he holds up the ball well when players are getting tired. He plays in those around him. And he had one chance, maybe two chances towards the end, where he could have perhaps done better. But the confidence is there. But I think, you know, as I said to you on Twitter, Chris, I think he works as an impact sub. He works as potentially a plan B. Whether he's a starter ahead of Harry Kane, I don't think we're going to see that very often. But I think a good result for Spurs in the end, considering the form we went into the game in, and obviously the disappointment of Wednesday night in the Champions League, that defeat to Leverkusen. I think Kyle Walker and especially Danny Rose were exceptional, sort of as the wing-backs. Moussa Dembele as well, you know, he's been below par this season, but he looked to have found his rhythm today. So I think it's fair to say that for Spurs it was a better result than Arsenal, and they maintain that unbeaten league start, which of course is crucial. Elsewhere today, the other big game, a big result, Lawrence, for Liverpool, hammering Watford 6-1 to go Klopp of the table, if you catch me.
Oh, good.
For the first time. You haven't seen that anywhere
else.
Oh, Jesus,
you didn't do that.
Sorry, guys. I apologise. It was terrible. They go top of the table for the first time under Jurgen Klopp, Lawrence. Again, an incredible attacking performance, and it's the fifth time this season Liverpool have scored four or more goals in the league.
First time they go top under Klopp, and for some weird reason, someone tweeted out it's the first time in 900, I think, and 16 days that they've been top of the table.
Wow.
Taking them a while to get back to that position, but it was an interesting game. I think it's not, obviously it wasn't, I actually don't think it was Liverpool at their best. I think Klopp raises the point post-match that actually they still have a lot to do, that they faced a side who Liverpool knew how to exploit, but also knew how to exploit Liverpool, which I think is more worrying for Liverpool. Had Watford been better at putting away their chances, it probably could have been 6-3 or 6-4. And, you know, there's sort of nebulous statistics like Liverpool haven't kept a clean sheet, etc., etc. I mean, if you're going to score six, it's probably a bit of a ridiculous statistic for a round, isn't it? But it still shows how potent Liverpool's front line is and how dangerous those guys are. I'm still impressed with the movement. I'm still impressed with the way that they all work together. And even when Sturridge comes on and someone else fits into that combination, the other players seem to know what to do to work around them. And it is reminiscent of that old Klopp side where they sort of seem to understand each other a little bit better. I'm honestly, as a Liverpool fan, I'm really enjoying watching it, but it still doesn't fill me with confidence. I don't think it's a long-lasting tactic if it continues like this. And I think Klopp's right. It does have to improve, because they won't win the league if they continue playing games like that.
Are you starting to dream of that first Premier League title, Lawrence?
Not seemed... really.
No. Really?
No. No. I still think there's a long way to go. It's very easy to get lulled into a false sense of security looking at those run of games when you're going to play teams who are going to be pretty desperate for points. Also, Liverpool will become somewhat of a head to take, I think, in the league, because they're going to be one of the form teams. That will not work against Liverpool, but I think it's very easy to sort of spin them either way. And at the same time, I think they've still got a number of players in there who have got mistakes in them. I think in the past, it's been those mistakes that have let Liverpool down. The only thing that seems to be saving Liverpool right now is they are vastly outscoring their opponents.
They have as well. They have beaten Arsenal away, Chelsea away, and got a point at White Hart Lane as well.
But the point is that they've not been fake. I mean, I understand that, you know, you can only play teams when you're supposed to play them, so you only play them as part of fixture list. So, you know, whatever, they get those results. And I understand, you know, the nature of the way that the league works. That's the whole point for schedule and those sort of things. And Klopp will have looked at that and assessed it. And, you know, it does also bear saying, they've not got Europe, you know, they've only got the cup competitions, and they can sort of rotate in and out on that. And not only, I think the good thing is, and I think this is the more positive thing to Liverpool right now, it's not just one player that Liverpool are sort of looking at right now. There's a number of players in there that are achieving that. You know, Emre Can got the header today, finished a move. Mane, Coutinho, Firmino, even when Sturridge came on, I think he hit the woodwork twice, maybe even three times. So it could have been a lot more, but that's not really my point. My point is when they play a better side, that's the real litmus test for Liverpool. Yeah, that's the difference.
I mean, Lawrence points to a number of players performing there, Chris. Goals throughout the team, of course, performances throughout the team, but arguably the man of the match, Philippe Coutinho, so central to Liverpool's play. He's got 3 goals and 5 assists in his last 7 league appearances. He is so important for Jurgen Klopp's side, isn't he?
He is, and I saw an interview with him and Firmino they did together. I think this week, or at least that's when I saw it, and you can just see there's an understanding between the two of them and an appreciation for what one offers the other. And it's difficult to look past him at the minute, and there's talk about a new contract, Real Madrid, all that stuff. I think he just needs that consistency. That's all he needs.
People talking, as Chris mentions there, Lawrence, people talking about a move for Coutinho already, long been linked for a move to Real Madrid, to Barcelona. Do you think with his form, like with Suarez, like with Bale, you know, when these key Premier League players perform so well, is in the back of your mind, is there that danger that you could lose such an important player, or are you just high on the current success?
I mean, is it one or the other? Do I have to pick one or the other, or can I sort of add some context to both those thoughts?
No, please do.
So obviously, you know, Liverpool fans are high on this right now, and that sort of gives them the bombastic idea that, hey, we can keep players if we just, you know, if we continue like this. Now, I think with Klopp comes a wealth of experience of trying to keep players and learning to lose those guys. And also that I think that's why Klopp was stressing so much at the beginning, you know, that there is no one that's supposed to be central to this. Obviously that's sort of, it's numbing a pain rather than sort of getting rid of the pain itself of actually losing the player. I think Liverpool probably do all they can to try and keep Coutinho if someone like Real Madrid, Barcelona came knocking, because I think he's a very marketable asset in the big emerging markets, because A, he's Brazilian, B, he's quite an attractive player to watch, and C, I also think he sort of fits the Klopp model very nicely. So he ticks all the boxes, essentially. It's not like they're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. And at the age he is, I think Liverpool will try and pull out all the stops instead of losing someone like that. I would love to know what price someone like, I mean, I wouldn't love to know. I wouldn't even love to read it. But, you know, it would be interesting to see what price someone like Barcelona would offer. And also, I think
million,
it would be
upwards of 50.
Someone
million.
Said 54. You know, I mean, considering some of the prices have been banded around for other players and how ridiculously some of those other guys have had to up their prices, I think Liverpool would be well advised to hold out for more, to be honest, because I think he's a very marketable asset. And, you know, you can talk about, you know, realistic or unrealistic markets. I'm only saying that because I don't think he's a realistic market. I also think Coutinho understands the obscurity from which he was plucked by Liverpool, because I think there were feelings that maybe he had sort of, you know, things wouldn't get much better for him. You know, he'd gone through a very difficult time at Inter Milan, sort of fallen out of favour and those sort of things. And Liverpool sort of revived him. And I know this, you know, it wasn't similar with Suarez, but you could sort of follow a similar line in that sense, that Liverpool wanted to take him to the next level. And it was sort of like, well, we'll take you to the next level and you'll stick around and then, oh, you're gone. I just wonder what his, you know, he really seems to have gelled with someone like Klopp, because Klopp has soul and I think Coutinho is a similar player. So I think you'd always hope from a fan's perspective, even if it's not a realistic one, that he would stick around because he's enjoying his football and doesn't want that to end. Not only that, but they've got, you know, another Brazilian that he gels very well with, and that's definitely going to serve him in trying to get into things like the Brazil squad and become a more influential player there as well.
Signed for 8.5 million almost 4 years ago now, depending on what Liverpool achieve this season, be it the league, be it Europe, I think, you know, he could go down as one of the all-time great Premier League bargains, of course. But Liverpool are top of the table on 26 points. Back in sixth, Dave, are Manchester United. They ended a run of 4 Premier League games without a win against Swansea, a 3-1 win at the Liberty Stadium. And it was a dominant performance, wasn't it, Dave?
Yeah, you'd say so. It was a good end to a poor week for Manchester United. But I think Mourinho potentially could have stumbled on a system that really works for some of these players. So United, the team sheet came out and it was, United could have played a number of systems. They could have played a 4-4-2 with Pogba out left, Rooney with Zlatan. Could have been a 4-2-3-1 with Young left wing, Carrick potentially at centre-back. But in fact, it was a 4-3-2-1 with Wayne Rooney and Juan Mata playing behind Zlatan Ibrahimovic, not playing out wide, not stretching the pitch horizontally, but getting into the space. It was sort of like United were playing with two number 10s. Similar to like what Argentina used to do back in the day with Diego Maradona. He used to be the playmaker. They'd have a second striker and then a target man or a central striker to play off. And that's what they were doing. Zlatan was coming to the ball and then Mata, Rooney were trying to get in behind or they were attacking the space. And the fluidity of that front three worked really well. It's something that could be Wayne Rooney's future in a way. You know, he's played centrally. He's played in number 10. He's played in central midfield. But he started playing left midfield for United when United were really, really dominant in the Premier League and in Europe. So potentially going back there, he understands his defensive work, but also he understands the 10 space and he understands where he can attack that and how he can push defences. But consequently, it frees up space for the likes of Paul Pogba, who also suit playing central midfield, but playing it a little bit wider. So with this two in the middle, Pogba can go out wider and he can create chances from the left wing. But overall, United were a lot better than they have been, and Zlatan took both his chances. Then United won the game. It's simple stuff, football.
Interesting, as
clearly
Dave says,
not that right.
Interesting there, though. That Dave's talking about all those parts functioning. Krishna Ibrahimovic back on the score sheet with two. That Pogba goal, of course, and Wayne Rooney arguably being the man of the match to assist after what's been a difficult period for him. But also, Michael Carrick was crucial to this one.
His passing is just wonderful. I'm not telling you anything new when I say that. But if you just look at his kind of chalkboard, there's so few errors in there, and yet so many of his passes are forward. And, you know, it's funny, someone did actually say, when I tweeted that out, that he is crap. And I was like, find me a midfielder that can do that. And I mean, ironically, it was a Sunderland fan. And I was like, well, you know, get Jack Rodwell to do that then every week, and you'll not have a problem. But he is. He's someone that has
lovely timed banter.
Well, the thing is, for some people, it looks like he's just passing the ball on to other people, but he's not. He's actually keeping them ticking over. He's picking clever spots. He's a very intelligent midfielder. And I think when he was younger, when he was at Spurs, yeah, he was a little bit more box-to-box. He maybe did things on both sides of the ball. Whereas now, he is working best just sitting there and spraying the ball around. And it does. It takes a lot of, I would say, not just composure, but also intelligence on the ball, and then technical quality to actually achieve what your mind intends to do. So for me, I just think for all the talk of the midfield and Pogba and everything, there's just a little lack of appreciation for what's around him and what could benefit him in terms of the teammates that are chosen to play alongside him. I think someone like Carrick could be great for him.
I agree. Can I also sort of add to that point that I still worry a little bit for United, because in years gone by, I think it made sense that Sir Alex had made a system or had got players in there that he knew he could rely on. I don't feel like there's very many people in roles that they feel they can rely on right now. And at the same time, to add to that, I think the Pogba strike is fantastic. It's a really great goal, you know, and, you know, the same goes for Zlatan and him scoring too. You know, he's getting in the right positions. And I think it's almost better to congratulate the Zlatan goals than it is the Pogba goals in this one. Because the Zlatan goals come from the work that the team is putting in. The Pogba goal comes from work that Pogba's putting in.
See, a counterpoint to that is the reason why the drop ball drops to Pogba. One is his starting position. He's drifted to the left wing. He's in a natural position that he likes to play from. But the big thing is the Wayne Rooney run. It takes the defence back. And that's something that Wayne Rooney constantly did, was push the defence back. And it was in all the goals. You see Wayne Rooney make a forward run, or Wayne Rooney play off a knockdown for the third one. But you go back to that goal. So the ball comes into Rooney, he flicks it back. The defence moves back and it opens up the space outside the area for Pogba just to stroll in there and hit it on the half volley.
It's not really a counterpoint. That's sort of adding to my point. My point would be that it basically, you know, not every player can strike a ball in the way that Pogba can strike a ball. So it's sort of there's individual brilliance there with Pogba, but there's also team brilliance there, which have sort of built towards the Zlatan goal. But my point would be you're more likely to get the Zlatan goals than you are to get the Pogba goals. And so that's almost where people should be congratulating United more right now, because, and I think also, you know, it was very interesting to see Zlatan's interview afterwards. He sort of, in a very basic way, just sort of said, but, you know, look, I knew that if I kept on getting into this position, then a goal will come. or two in this case. Good luck with that hair, Adam. So, you know, I think it's just worth saying, and especially with this side, it's all well and good doing that analysis, but the consistency and the delivery of the system and the delivery of, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, this United way under Mourinho, it's just as important to have those Carrick guys as it is to have these new big signings. And I think people don't laud those other, you know, United basic players enough anymore. Whereas in the past, I think they focused on them.
I'd like to point out that Zlatan only has 6 league goals so far.
Yeah.
Right.
I'd also like to point out he's got fucking ages to score the rest.
I'd also like to point out it was Swansea, Chris. Bob Bradley's only got 1 point from his first 4 matches. The winless run now goes back to the opening day of the season. Level with points with Sunderland.
Timing is a funny thing in football. And I think this is a bad time to manage a Swansea side. Because...
That's comedy.
If you go back to when they came into the Premier League and the first few years after, they were known for being so diligent, so well prepared, so well managed. And yet now, that's simply not the case. And from talking to people with a better knowledge of it than myself, it seems as if a lot of the recruitment staff have been ignored and that actually the higher-ups have been pushing through transfers. People like Van der Hoorn, I appreciate that he scored a goal today and that will be a positive. But people like him shouldn't be replacing Ashley Williams. It sounds perhaps harsh and naive to harp on one issue. You look at that squad and you see some of the players in there and you don't see enough quality. The midfield is relatively okay. I'm still surprised people in the Premier League keep buying Leroy Fer, personally, because he just seems to get relegated time and time again. Happened with QPR, happened with Norwich, now potentially looks like happening with Swansea. You then go forward... And you look at the attack that there is to work with, and Borja Bastón is completely untested in this league, which is not to say he's a bad player, as much to say that's a really big risk to take on a forward that's just coming into the league. You've then got Llorente again, who hasn't really had time to come in, maybe isn't in the peak of his career, if anything, is sliding down that mountain, so to speak. It's just a series of bad decisions that I can't fully understand or fully grasp, because, like I say, it's so polar opposite to what we've come to associate with Swansea that while I'm certainly not absolving Bob Bradley from blame, because I think there are some decisions that he made today that weren't great. Sitting so deep didn't seem the smartest idea to me. That was a little bit of fear, I think, in him that shouldn't have really come forth into the team selection. There are also a lot of problems at that club that make me think, this is not really a club that I would want to be managing personally.
I mean, that's an interesting
one, because of the squad, I should say.
But as Chris says, you know, we've talked about Swansea for a number of years of being such a well-run club. Brendan Rodgers in there first, then Martinez, and then after Gary Monk left, it seems to have sort of fallen apart a little bit with the new owners. I mean, what do you make of that situation?
I do think when people try and put their mark on a club, then that obviously changes things. I also think they sort of ran out of options towards the end. You know, it's all well and good having a number of managers that think in a certain way. I also think that they thought with those disciples of that way of football. Those disciples with that style of football worked very well at that time, but it's arguable that football has moved forward and they've not appointed to keep up with that. So it was almost perfect at that time to play that kind of football with that. So now that they've not moved forward with it, they've almost had to go back to basics. And I'm not saying Bob Bradley's basic, but Bob Bradley certainly isn't in that school of managers who believe in, the Pochettino way, the Klopp way, or the trendy way of football at the moment. So you'd call it returning to something that most people know much better, which is not, it's a reductionist, whatever it is, about Bradley. But yeah, the point is that they've sort of had to return back to zero with the club. And very often in the Premier League, when you return back to that zero, that means relegation. And sadly, that might be true this season, even though, you know, Bob Bradley is a very well-rated coach, et cetera, et cetera.
So Swansea joint bottom of the table then with Sunderland. Just 2 points above the relegation, though, are Leicester after losing 2-1 at home to West Brom. A Danny Drinkwater mistake costing Leicester. Ultimately, it's their first defeat at home since September 2015, Chris, after a run of 20 games unbeaten at the King Power Stadium. Gary Lineker tweeting out earlier that this side could be the first one to win the league and get relegated in the next season. Might be a little too early for that sort of panic, but still, things again are not going well for Leicester at the moment.
Game of fine margins at the best of time, and I think when you're playing against a team that is so organised and drilled as West Brom, that increases. This Leicester team in general, for me, is one that's been found out in a lot of ways. I think that's best represented by Mahrez. So I always like to see if numbers actually back up what I'm seeing or what I think I'm seeing on the pitch. And his take on numbers were decent today. I think he got like 6 of 9, which is fairly respectable. Yet there was a few instances where he squared up either Alan Neom or the other fullback, and you could tell he wanted to go onto his strong foot, which is, I think, his left. So he wanted to go inside all the time. And it's little nuances like that that have made Leicester a much easier proposition to play against, because on the other wing, they've got Ahmed Musa, who, for what he beats Mahrez in speed, he loses to in technical skill. So he's a very simple player in that sense, that if you can kind of get him close enough to the byline, it's going to be very difficult for him to get past you and then get a cross in on top of that. And you throw Vardy in the mix there, who, I know he got absolute pelters for saying this, Michael Owen, that he thought he was lucky last season. I don't necessarily disagree with the sentiment of it. I think it was form, not class, from Vardy.
You're going to get pelters now on Twitter. You realise that, yeah?
Well, the reason I say this, and I'll try and explain it in a little bit more detail than Owen did. I've said on here before that when I spoke to people at Stocksbridge, they said his game hadn't changed from when he was there. And that game is a very simplistic way of playing. It's to sit on the shoulder, exploit the space that's left him behind. That space isn't there anymore because teams are not coming out as readily to play against Leicester, because they know that they've now got a lot better players than perhaps people thought 13, 14 months ago. So that's changing the opportunities that he's trying to get. And it means you've got to be much smarter. You've got to be able to use what little space you have around you very effectively. And the truth is, I don't think Vardy can really do that. He wasn't raised in an academy where he was taught those kind of nuances and those kind of, I would say, advanced techniques. So he is very much a simplistic striker that had a good patch of form. It's almost an extended version of what Ame Zaki did a few years ago for Wigan. In my eyes, it's someone that came at a good time, was in a good team, and everything kind of fit together for him.
I mean, Lawrence, what do you make of the fact that their Champions League exertions are being pointed to as a problem, as well as some of the issues that Chris has pointed out?
I mean, I can kind of see what they're saying, but at the same time, they're also getting results elsewhere. So I think it's more a tactical thing in the Premier League. And maybe also a confidence thing, maybe also a priority thing, maybe also a mentality thing. I think all those things are probably going to end up applying with Leicester. I also just, it's sort of a case of, look, they've done it and they know that they're not going to be able to do it again. I think, you know, inertia and confidence sort of ends up draining away at that point. So I'll be interested to see whether it sort of continues in the Champions League like this. I mean, Dave sort of put the point that, you know, they will be able to go out in Europe and tactically outthink people, but maybe not so much in the Premier League. So I'll be interested to see how he looks to solve it. We asked the question earlier on Twitter, didn't we? What would you do to solve Leicester City? No one came back with a good answer.
How do you solve a problem like Leicester City?
How do you solve a problem like City?
Well, Lawrence, I think Mahrez moving inside to number 10 could be a good option, and then putting the pace around him. But I think you need that level of work, and I think it's something that Leicester City haven't done well enough with these new players that have come in. They don't work as hard as the Leicester City players that worked last season. The likes of Musa doesn't track back. The likes of you'd say the new central midfielder, his name, I can't think of his name, isn't covering as much ground as Kante, and Drinkwater's having to do more than just his role. You know, last season, Drinkwater and Kante, it was a great relationship between two players, and they almost covered the third position in a way of, You know, they had the playmaker, the destroyer, and the passer in there as of two players. And now Drinkwater's having to do two of those roles, and maybe he isn't getting up to that same level. But I think if you move Mahrez inside...
Andy King, isn't it, you're talking about there in that sense?
Not Andy King, it's Daniel Admarty, is it? The other lad that plays next to him at the moment. But yeah, I think throwing Mahrez inside and giving Mahrez the licence to just drift around and operate, it would open up a lot more avenues for him. Because again, like Chris saying, it's a little bit easy to play against him now. We know he's a left-footed player, and we know he does like to come onto his stronger foot from the right-hand side. So if you give him more freedom, maybe the rest of the side will have more freedom, and consequently, the change of shape may work.
Dave, what just to note, Amati didn't play today, but I mean,
he didn't play today. But I think the last time I saw him, he played.
Yeah, it was Andy. It was Andy King today.
Again, Andy King's the same sort of player.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
Dave, what do you make of the problems they've got in central defence? Because as Lauren says, we did tweet that out earlier. You know, how would you solve a problem like Leicester City? And a lot of people writing in, replace Hoof, buy a new centre back. That does seem to be an area of weakness for them this season, having been such a strength when they won the title last year.
I'd say so, because again, going back to the first point that Chris sort of made in terms of they figured that people have figured Leicester City out. They kind of figured them out maybe February last year, and teams started to sit deeper and deeper against Leicester. But Leicester just sort of nicked that, still had that ability to nick that first goal from a set piece, from whatever. But as teams are more aware, as people take note of Leicester City, they sit deeper, which means the likes of Huth and Wes Morgan aren't defending on their penalty area anymore. They're defending on the halfway line. And you don't want Wes Morgan or Huth defending on the halfway line, because there's so much space to expose them. You pull them wide, you can get behind them, you can knock the ball over the top. You know, you're playing against their weaknesses. The reason why Leicester was so good last season was because Leicester City enabled their players to play to their strengths, like Wes Morgan, like Robert Huth, though, defending the penalty area, like Danny Simpson, like Christian Fuchs. That is a pretty poor back four if you think about if you're playing on the halfway line. You can expose that.
Mufasa wrote in saying, bring back the man, Kante. Easier said than done. But Preston has a more constructive suggestion. He says, bring in Corentin Tolisso from Lyon to diversify the midfield, and a young centre-back to replace Huth, like many other people are saying. Orban from Red Bull Leipzig would be good. Do you agree with that briefly, Dave?
Yeah, you know, two pretty decent players, I'd have to say. But yeah, I think they need two centre-backs, maybe not one. But kind of that's the problem. You know, you go on to win the Premier League, teams will slowly figure you out, and they didn't deal with it well enough in the market. I think they lost one of their biggest cogs, and they didn't really replace that big cog with an advancement. They kind of bought a few players, they spent a lot of money, but there's no key cog that's been put back into that side that you'd be like, shit, that guy is the shit.
It's also that sense of timing, isn't it? I mean, I think Chris was right earlier talking about timing, which has worked really well for Leicester with timing last season, that they bought in the manager at the right time. He wanted to play a system which exploited what was going on. Works.
Finally, in the Premier League today, we had Hull with a massive win, a 2-1 win at home over Southampton, coming back from one goal down to secure Mike Phelan's first win since he was appointed as permanent manager. They lost Will Keane and Abel Hernandez to injury in the first half, but Robert Snodgrass came on as a substitute, having missed the last two games with an ankle injury, and inspired him to victory. He got that one goal, and then I think 2 minutes later, he set up Michael Dawson for the winner. He's actually contributed 50% of their 10 goals this season, so he's proven very vital for them, and ended what would have been a record-breaking run, potentially 7 wins in a row that would have been in the league. But as for Southampton, Chris, a famous win over Inter Milan in the week, you'd have expected them to potentially secure the 3 points against the struggling Tigers, but they pay for their wastefulness in front of goal today. And after, you know, a good spell under Claude Puel, it's now 3 games without a win in the Premier League.
Yeah, I think we see this a lot though with mid-table teams that get into Europe. There's inevitably a drop-off when they compete there for a season, because it's a lot of travel, it's a lot of demands, it's a lot of exertion, and you've got to try and maybe rotate, and rotate brings potential weakness into the team. I think they'll be frustrated, but I don't think they'll be too disheartened. Like I say, like you said there yourself, they got the big win against Inter Milan midweek. That's another kind of statement for them. And I think you can move forward in positive ways that are not the league table. So if they do well in the Europa League, that will likely help them, I think, with signing better players moving forward, which should in turn help them then move up the table. So I'm sure no one's delighted that they're on this little mini run of bad results. But even saying that, it's a mini run. So I don't think it's anything to be horrendously concerned about right now.
Right, that is Sunday's Premier League results review. Let's move on to some of the key fixtures around Europe in part 2. Right, first off, Dave, let's go to the Bundesliga, which, as we said last week, is shaping up very nicely indeed. Just 6 points separating the top seven, so very competitive at the moment. The pick of the weekend games, of course, was Bayern Munich versus Hoffenheim, two of the unbeaten sides this season. How did it play out?
That was a very, very good game of football. A contrast in styles. Ancelotti's sort of 4-5-1, 4-3-3. Versus Nagelsmann's 3-5-2, but he didn't play it as a 3-5-2 against Bayern. He was quite smart. He played it more of a 5-3-2. So there was a distinct back five. But the energy that this team shows is absolutely incredible. The work rate of the wing-backs, the central midfielders, the strikers. It's just all together. It's a unit that knows what they're doing and is tactically very, very aware to, you know, nuances in the game. You know, if you're going to come up against a three-man midfield, do this. Three at the back, do this. And it just seems that they've hit some gold here with their coach and, again, put in a really good result and arguably should have won the game. The goal was quite fortuitous that Bayern Munich scored, you know, a wide cross that unfortunately was turned into their own goal. But the Hoffenheim goal was really, really good, a well-worked move, you know, playing out of a Bayern Munich press, playing a very direct ball through, breaking two lines, I think broke their midfield, broke the defensive line, and then a lovely pullback and a brilliant finish from the German midfielder. I think it's Demirbi, who we mentioned before. But nice. No, it was a very good performance for Hoffenheim, and again, unbeaten in the Bundesliga this season. Mm. One of only five teams in Europe, in fact.
You said Hoffenheim again. Is this like some bizarre thing that you do?
This is like his Twitch.
Is this an in-joke that I've missed or something?
No. The Dave, you talk about one of those unbeaten teams. One of them is Red Bull Leipzig, who, after Bayern Munich's 1-0 draw with Hoffenheim, are now joint top. Goals from your lookalike, Timo Werner, and also Emil Forsberg, meaning they remain unbeaten as well. And it's been just such an incredible start for them, having been promoted this season.
I think so, yeah. But their style, we've already spoke about how their style is so combative, and it's getting results. You know, Timo Werner has been one of the standout players of the Bundesliga this season. And again, getting on the score sheet with two pretty decent goals. But it's how they break and how they attack with such speed and width. And everything. Forsberg as well, the left winger, is just...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He's a breath of fresh air. He's a very creative forward, and it just works so well with their system. And it is the sort of Red Bull style. It looks exactly like the Red Bull Salzburg team that we saw a few seasons ago with Sadio Mane and Kevin Campbell. And it's just, I think this Leipzig team, it looks like they are really going to push on, and they're definitely going to hit Europe. It's just performance after a performance. They keep putting in these high pressing, high tempo performances that win games of football, puts teams under such pressure that they just can't deal with it. And they absolutely collapse like Mainz did. Obviously, Mainz did play away in the Europa League and picked up a defeat there. But still, the tempo and the style and the pressing, everything was there for Leipzig again today. And the forward line was, you know, perfect.
Are you not thinking about sticking a fiver on them winning the league? You know, a Leicester-style win on the cards?
I think Bayern Munich have got a little bit too much with their front three. And I think Dortmund, again, are going to come back. I think Dortmund, you know, Hamburg got absolutely destroyed. Hamburg are a team that have been rocking up and down the Bundesliga table for so many years, and they've just been so poor in the last few seasons, you know, battling relegation. The two centre-backs, I think it's Kleber and Giroud, that used to be at Arsenal, absolutely poor. And Aubameyang just ripped them apart, scored four goals, got an assist, was directly involved in every single one of the goals, but... You know, his work after the incident that we can't speak about on Wednesday night has come back to form. He was trying to get a move to an AC Milan, I think it was.
Was he now?
Yeah, he was in Milan, wasn't he?
Oh, because he partying, didn't he? I bet.
Yeah, he broke the rules. So he did. Thomas Tuchel likes his players back in Germany 24 hours before the game, and apparently Aubameyang was out in Milan with his pals because obviously he came through the academy there.
Oh, that's nice.
Always a good idea to go out with your pals, isn't it? Just
it always ends well at football.
Manager.
It always ends well. As you say, Dave, a good win for them, winning 5-2. It's actually their first win in five league games. So it closes the gap at the top with Bayern dropping points to 6 points overall. And as we say, shaping up very nicely indeed in the Bundesliga. How about we go to Italy next? Napoli, Lazio.
Not literally.
The pick of the weekend's games, Dave, Napoli, Lazio.
It was just an interesting game. It was an interesting game of two managers, Simeone and Inzaghi, versus obviously Sarri. And, you know, Napoli did so well last season to compete, but without Gonzalo Higuain and, you know, Milik going out with a long-term injury, they really lacked firepower up top. But it was an impressive display from Napoli. They did dominate. Lazio grabbed a pretty fortuitous goal. Pepe Reina getting beat at his near post, something that, you know, has hampered his career in a way, especially the end of his Liverpool career. That was an obvious weakness and probably should have saved Keita's shot. But no, I think in terms of Mario Hamzik, very, very impressive display. And again, how has he been at Napoli for so long? How have someone like Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich not picked him up? Because he's such a talented player. You see, his goal is absolutely fantastic. But when Napoli were really turning the screw, Hamzik was involved in everything. His ability to spread the ball long to short to mix the tempo up, it's incredible. And yeah, I definitely put him up there with some of the best attacking midfields in world football.
Finally in Europe, let's go to Spain. That's what you say, not literally, Lawrence.
Not literally.
Nice. Real Madrid.
Illiterato.
Real Madrid winning 3-0 against Leganés to go top of the table. Gareth Bale scoring 2 to celebrate his new contract in style. I believe it's £360,000 a week after tax. Is that right?
Yeah. Wow. Hey, it doesn't seem like anyone in Spain worries about tax anyway.
It's a decent chunk of money. It is a decent chunk of money, has to be said. Hey. So yeah,
there's a wink next to that bit of the contract. After tax.
After wink. Tax. And that's where Starbucks begin to sponsor the team.
Madrid winning without playing well, though, Dave. That seems to be the story. And good news for them, Modric and Casemiro returning after the international break.
Yeah, I think they have lacked both of those players in terms of their style. Isn't the greatest style. It just seems like Zidane has these players and, you know, he puts them on the team sheet and they go out. You know, there's no tactical ideas of, you know, there's no Pep Guardiola. We're playing in between the lines. We want to play, we're going to break down that way. We want to move you around. Just seems like he has these players, and because of the sheer ability of them, they break teams down. It's more like, you know, you lads go out today. It's a bit like an Ancelotti approach. Obviously, Ancelotti has taught Zidane a lot when he was, you know, assistant manager there. But I think with Modric coming back, then you've got someone that's going to sort of start to dictate games, start to spread the ball about, start to move your team up. But also Casemiro, you know, Madrid have been playing without a defensive midfielder for like 2 months, and surprisingly, they're top of the league. But when Casemiro comes back, we'll see his influence again of being able to just break the play up and, yeah, spread the ball, give it to Modric, give it to Toni Kroos and let them play. So it's going to be positive for them. And if they're top of the league now, maybe they'll go on to win it, especially with Atletico dropping points as well this weekend.
The other good news coming out of Madrid, of course, is that Cristiano Ronaldo has signed a brand spanking new contract until 2021 when he was 36 years old. Not sure how much he's earned after tax. I'm sure it's comparable with Gareth Bale's, maybe slightly less. I think Bale is supposed to be earning more. What do you make of this one? I think he is earning more, is he not?
Probably. I mean, I'm only saying. Is it going to be the Luis Figo effect, I think, that we're seeing here with Ronaldo? He wants to be the elder statesman of Real Madrid. Yes. For that reason, maybe.
Grey cover-up products for your hair.
Yeah, well... Sure, yeah. I mean, if that's what he wants.
But it looks like, you know, all this speculation we've heard over all these previous summers, going back to Manchester United, going to PSG, going to MLS, this hints, you know, obviously contracts are not the most trusted
documents
in football.
Yeah.
But it looks like he may well end his career at Madrid now.
Hope so. Yeah, that'd be lovely. Yeah, but I mean, even then, it's probably, you know, there's bits and bobs in there that I think you're right. Still think, though, that it's well worth the paper it's written on, considering how much money it's worth. And yeah, I look forward to seeing him play in a lot of different Zidane iterations and then off to PSG.
Looks like he is angling for that sort of modelling fashion career after he does indeed stop playing, if you've witnessed his Instagram account in the past week. And if you guys have seen this, Lawrence, have you seen this?
Yeah, of course, mate.
Some very interesting pictures. Looks like the Terminator in one of them, Cowboy in another. He He's in his pants in a few of them. I mean, you know, he's a man of many talents.
And a man of many crotches.
Yes, yeah. A man of many crotches. On that note, that is some of the key fixtures and news rounded up in Europe. Let's get back to Saturday's Premier League action. Right, so on Saturday, the big result was Chelsea winning 5-0 against Everton, Dave. Fireworks off the pitch, but fireworks on the pitch as well, you might say. Nice.
Very nice, Adam. But no, I think this Chelsea team is really hitting some form and they are definitely looking like title challengers. I think the difference between the Liverpool team that played the 3-4-3 under Brendan Rodgers and this Conte system is that this Conte system more looks like a 5-4-1 because defensively they're so sound. There's no space in between the fullback and the wing back. He's just absolutely killed it. And defensively they look good. But then going forward, you've got Eden Hazard who is back in form. And his link-up play with Diego Costa has been absolutely fantastic in the last few weeks. And obviously Pedro's back on the score sheet. And it's just looking good. It's looking very fresh. And it's an approach that the Premier League has never seen. You know, never really seen someone play this system this well. You know, the most clean sheets in the Premier League since moving to the 3-4-3. The fewest shots conceded on target. Mm. And the most goals. But the really interesting part is they didn't concede a shot on target against Everton. Against Lukaku and Yannick Bolasie. That is impressive.
Here's a question for you on Chelsea before we get on to Everton. Obviously, it was an unchanged 11. Obviously, they've been massively impressive. As you said, it's 5 wins in a row now, 0 goals conceded. In terms of their title challenge, do you think they have the squad depth to go all the way, essentially? I know everyone's making a big point about how they're not competing in Europe. That gives them a certain advantage. But if one of those key players, you know, we're talking about Hazard, we're talking about Costa, all these players seem to fit so well into the system. If they do get an injury, do you think they've got the strength and depth to sustain this challenge, Dave?
I think they do. You know, if you lost Eden Hazard, that'd be a massive, massive blow. But you could throw someone like Willian in there who has, you know, when he is the focal point of a side, you know, back to Shakhtar Donetsk, let's say, he can turn up. And we saw last season he was probably Chelsea's best player. Obviously not at the same level, but he could cover for maybe a month, maybe 2 weeks. But I think if a big player gets injured, like I think David Luiz is someone that no one's talking about because he's, he's this hate figure. He's cocky, kind of shows off. But he's been so crucial to this Chelsea backline. He's the one that commands it. He's the one that steps up. And it seems like Conte's given him the responsibility to make sure that he stays in the middle and doesn't disappear and doesn't mess about on the ball. But he's crucial into that. So if they lose him, that could be quite big. But I think Diego Costa as well could be a bit of a blow if he goes out. But I think that Chelsea squad is good enough to replace these players. Maybe wing back, that could be one, because that's quite a specialist position.
Yes.
So maybe Mikel Alonso goes. That could be an issue. In fact, Mikel Alonso, Chelsea are unbeaten when Mikel Alonso started for Chelsea. So he is a big factor and they've not conceded the goal. So if he goes, maybe as well. So there is a few creaks, but I think this Chelsea team and squad has enough to definitely challenge.
It is all clicking perfectly. Eden Hazard, of course, an absolutely outstanding performance. It's actually the first time in his career he scored in 4 consecutive league matches. So he is a man on fire. But as good as Chelsea were, Kristen, Everton, they weren't too impressive. Do you think it was a tactical mistake by Koeman to try and match Chelsea's formation?
Yes, and I think Koeman made that point himself, didn't he? That it was wrong to do that. And, you know, in fairness to him, I think he even said they simply outplayed us in every aspect of the game. So there was a lot of honesty from his end. I think what you have to remember with this Chelsea side as it's built right now, I took a lot of pills for saying that against Man United, I didn't think they were consistently as good as many people thought, that they just turned it on for minutes. I think games like this prove why I said that, because they were flawless almost throughout the entire thing. They were brilliant from start to finish. And the thing is with that front three is that...
Great podcast.
That front three, it essentially masks everybody's frailties and highlights their strengths. So you have the likes of Hazard and Pedro who can give pace, can give movement, have so much space to run into. But then you've also got the power of Costa that gives them the time to get there and make the most of that space. But then also you don't have Costa trying to beat a defender from 30, 40 yards out from goal, which he can't really do. He's not the best runner with the ball, I would say. He's not someone who's going to tear away from a defender. So it's a very well put together forward line for me. And I think that's why they look so devastatingly dangerous, is because there's such a kind of connection between the three and what they offer. Behind that, I think it's very well organized. I think potentially it could get even better if you got a few better players in inverted commas. I think he could improve even more. It's not to say that it's bad right now. I think it's actually doing really well and it's not conceded a goal, so it's doing exactly what it's supposed to. But I think overall, yeah, it's a very well-balanced system. That's the main thing, is that it gives them enough in defence and I think gives them the numbers to make defending a little bit easier on the team. But then also when they need to change, you've got that 3-4-3 in the forward line. You've then got the midfield that has quality too.
I mean, Dave, you've spoken before about the potential weaknesses of this formation. I mean, where do you think Pochettino and potentially Guardiola, who are the next two big league games coming up after Middlesbrough, where do you think the weakness is that they should be aiming to attack at Chelsea?
I think it's drawing them out, really do. I think that you've got to try and, in a way, you've got to play on the counter-attack against this Chelsea team, because that's what they try and do to you. But also in terms of the first goal, because Chelsea have done so well at grabbing that first goal in recent weeks, they can go and sit back into this shape. So I think if you can block off, if you can starve Chelsea the ball in that first 15 minutes, that'll test them out. You know, Pep Guardiola goes and he holds the ball for 15 minutes. Then Chelsea have a little bit of a problem. Then they have to come out and play. And that's where you can try and catch them. Because I think they've been so solid defensively, but it's because they've had that lead and because they've been able to counter-attack. So I think it's the first goal is so crucial. If you can nick that first goal, then you play on the break against Chelsea. You know, that's definitely the recipe to go, but it's got to be slow. You've got to be so safe on the ball. You've got to, like, you know, you've got to play out the pressure that Hazard, Pedro and Costa are going to play on you. You've got to watch for Matic and Kante hunting the ball. It's a difficult thing. Potentially there's space in front of that back three. If Kante and Matic press you, you can play a direct ball over those two into the 10 space, maybe to a striker or to a number 10. That potentially could be a place when you've turned them, you're in behind their midfield and you're at that back three. But it just looks so good at the moment. It looks really good. Really impressed with Conte at the moment. So tactically perfect.
Chelsea just a point behind the league leaders. Liverpool then, after that 5-0 thrashing of Everton, all the way at the other end of the table, Sunderland beating Bournemouth 2-1 away from home. David Moyes finally getting his first win of the season at the Black Cats. Somehow doing it while away at Bournemouth, Chris, and with 10 men. It's surely all down to Moyes' incredible motivational skills.
He wasn't there, was he?
Let's all sit in a dark room.
Exactly.
Did you see what he did midweek with the squad?
Talk to us. Explain to us, Chris.
He took them... So, in the shadow of Sunderland is a large Nissan car factory.
Oh, God, yeah.
My dad actually worked there for a period as an air tool technician, about 12 years. And midweek, Moyes took them to the factory. Not to show them togetherness and what can be achieved if we all pull together. He took them there to show them what their lives could be like if they weren't footballers. Now,
a bit like a Ghost of Christmas Past sort of thing.
I do kind of see the intention. But then, you know, as I was talking to my dad about it, I said to him, you know, like, realistically, that must have been horrible for the factory workers to be like gawked at by these footballers saying, look how terrible your life could be. And he said, yeah, but I imagine they turned around and said, see, look how terrible your life could be. You could play for Sunderland. So it's a bizarre thing to do. I think what you can say about the game itself is that Victor Anishibi, for all his social media foibles, was brilliant. From what I could see, he was strong. He was energetic. He really kind of gave them a lot of link up in the lines. I think he was playing with a cracked rib for a good portion of the game as well.
Yes.
He was a brilliant player, and honestly, when they signed him, I said at the time that I was kind of surprised he hadn't been able to find a club prior to that, because, yeah, he wasn't a great goal scorer at any point, but he was always a nuisance. He was always someone that could be a figurehead for attack or someone to just keep the ball in the final third. I think it's a start for Sunderland. The playing two in midfield definitely helps. Two up front, excuse me, really helps them, I think. You could also forge a decent argument to say that they rode their luck a little bit, and but for Jordan Pickford pulling off a sensational save, they could have potentially even ended up drawing or losing the game. So I'm loath to give them too much criticism, because I think it was a very good performance overall, even better with the fact that they had 10 men for a good portion of it. I think, as he said himself though, Moyes, he's not looking to get carried away with it.
Yeah, I do also love the idea of David Moyes covering himself in flour and then coming in through the footballer's bedroom windows at night and being like, when the clock strikes 12. And they're all like, oh no, where are you taking me? And he's like, a dark place, the Nissan factory.
Moisey and Moisey. Ooh.
It's such a weird one because it could be. I mean, what do you make of it, Lawrence? It does feel almost a bit David Brent-esque, but you know, as Chris is sort of saying, it does have the air of going, oh, look, could be worse, lads. You could be working here. But at the same time, Moyes came out and said, you know, he wanted the players to know where the supporters come from, where they work, how they work, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, but he did also say in a post-match match of the day interview, they did all see what they could have been doing.
Yeah, when you put it like that, it doesn't really help.
Yeah, I mean, when he literally nails it on the head as David Brent would have. You know, and I imagine he sort of did that in front of them as well. Look at this, guys. Look how shit everything could have been. No offence. Look how shit everything could have been. Still come along on Saturday.
That's the kind of popularism that really pisses off football fans as well. And I can completely see why, because it's if we assume that for a second he's not taking them there to show them how fortunate they are to be footballers, or that, you know, how life could have been, then there is that part of like, oh, you know, these are the people that you play for. Why do you have to go to the Nissan factory to do that? Like, for starters, it's not a universally Sunderland supporting establishment.
No. Probably some J League fans in there.
Yes, it's huge in Penshaw, which is be a very niche joke for people. But I think honestly, I'd have more support for the idea if he held something like a fans forum. If he did something like he brought the players in and opened a dialogue with supporters. And
yeah, if he did something genuine,
the fanzines and things like that.
Now, everyone gather around. How shit are we?
That feels far more genuine, though, than taking them to, like, you know, what's next? You're just going to hang around in the Bridges for 2 hours and just see who comes up to talk to you and remind them that, oh, this is how you could be spending your Saturday buying stuff in HMV.
It feels like a token gesture, doesn't it?
Massively. It just feels like a token gesture and a bit of a stupid thing to do. And, like, he's trying to be smarter than he is.
That is a bit of an issue because, actually, you know, David Moyes does come across as quite a genuine guy. To me, at least. I mean, and I know that there are going to be some people who are cynical of managers. And he does get a bit of a hard time in the press. But then it is the execution of that move. And also maybe the idea that he didn't necessarily think of it. That sort of makes me a little bit more cynical of the idea. I just feel, I also just sort of think it sort of stinks of a manager who doesn't quite know how to connect to the players. So he just sort of comes up with a generic activity that they can do. Do you know what I mean? So it sort of is a bit like, oh, you guys must like cars. Let's go and see where cars are built, you know?
Have you got any of that GZ on your iPod?
GZ. As for Bournemouth.
It worked.
99 problems, I can relate.
As for Bournemouth, 99
problems, he's got less than me.
Bournemouth are without a winning three themselves now. That's back-to-back defeats for them. So a slight disappointing run for them. Dave, where do you think it's sort of gone wrong recently for Eddie Howe's team?
I think it's quite an interesting one. Obviously, the 6-1 was completely out of the form, guy. But I did, you know, I expect them to struggle. They haven't really strengthened their side. Jack Wilshere's been a decent enough signing, but he's not contributed as much as he would have liked him to contribute in terms of the whole side tactically. I just feel like they haven't really improved at all from last season, and we're kind of seeing that now, you know, what, 11 games in, and we're seeing that, you know, Junior Salazar is their top scorer with 3 goals. They're not really improved in that department. Adam Smith's registered the most assists. Again, there's no real improvement of this side. It just feels exactly the same as last season, and they haven't moved on at all.
Let's move on then to West Ham 1, Stoke 1. Let's start with Stoke form, because they're on a great run of form. After winning just 1 point in their first 5 games, now unbeaten in 6. This draw coming at the end of a run of 3 straight wins. Can we get some credit for Mark Hughes, please? Who wants to wax lyrical about Sparky? No takers? Nope.
So West Ham are all right, aren't they?
Mark Hughes is an interesting one. It seems like he always battles on the verge of being relegated, and then he'll go on the run of like 6 or 7 or 8 games where Stoke will absolutely blow people away, and then again it'll drop back to this sort of mediocrity or something like that. But I suppose he's getting the best out of the players he's got, and some of them are a little bit inconsistent. Again, Bojan scored the winner. We haven't seen him for half a year. He's been, I don't know, twiddling his thumbs or something. I think that's some of the, you know, some of these Stoke players, the consistency has been their problem throughout their whole careers, like Arnautovic, like Shaqiri, where they can explode. They can explode for a run of 5 games and then they'll drop off again. And I think we're seeing that at the moment. So he's getting them playing at the moment, but then, you know, look down the line, it could be all over again for them.
Hmm. Okay, let's talk about West Ham then. You know, at the London Stadium again, for all the talk of issues adjusting, do you think they're now settling in, Lawrence, and now unbeaten in the last four at home? Although it's slightly disappointing to drop points, two late goals to Sunderland. It's a creditable result, or do you think maybe they're going to see that as a missed chance with games against Spurs, United, Arsenal and Liverpool all coming up next?
Yeah, I do think that ultimately it's going to come down to the few points that they probably dropped come the end of the season. It's probably quite a cynical view. I think West Ham fans are probably a little bit more positive about the way that the club's going than anyone else on the outside of it. I think only West Ham fans really know what's going on the pitch in terms of what's going on off the pitch. I'm not sure they quite know what's going on the pitch, because having spoken to a few of them, I think some of them are maybe disillusioned with the way that the squad's been built, and then also maybe just pinning hopes on one or two players, and it strikes me as a slightly sort of desperate move. I just think West Ham did a few too many notches, you know, despite a successful stadium, the most successful stadium transition in history. They've just done it trying to do a few many too many notches at once. And it strikes you a little bit as someone who sort of reached a bit too far too quickly. They would have been much better to consolidate rather than try to reach even further very suddenly.
Mm. Another one-all draws between Manchester City and Middlesbrough at the Etihad Stadium. Manchester City essentially throwing away 3 points at home with Martin Terune scoring an injury time winner. It has to be said, Dave, City were sloppy in the second half, and it's disappointing coming off the back of such a big win over Barcelona in midweek.
You know, again, you could potentially look at tiredness. Potentially, you know, they did put all their effort midweek because they were absolutely fantastic midweek. Maybe they used all their energy sitting deep and counter-attacking against Barcelona. They should have, you know, they should have scored more. 25 shots and only scoring one goal isn't the best. You know, they did hit the top of the woodwork slash post, but it just wasn't good enough for Manchester City. They need to be, you know, dominating games a little bit more and taking that domination and converting that into goals, obviously, because they have been caught out, you know, the last four Premier League games. They've picked up 3-1-1 draws. I still think that they'll go on to win the Premier League title, but this is just a slight point of dealing with competition in Europe that's at a higher level, and then moving back to playing Middlesbrough, who defensively have been set out very, very well this season. Always been impressed when I've seen Middlesbrough.
Yeah. Have to be impressed by their determination as well to get that point. They're now unbeaten in three. But as for City, Lawrence, they're now, of course, been overtaken at the top. You know, those sort of 10 wins in a row at the start of the season seem like a long time ago. They are only 2 points short of Liverpool, but they look long short of the fluency and the potency of the Reds, of Chelsea as well. And as Dave says, a lot of 1-1 draws in there. I mean, it's hardly a full-blown crisis, but it's frustrating for them to drop points that they shouldn't be.
Yeah, certainly so. I think, you know, again, Pep Guardiola will probably be very aware of that. But when I say probably, he is very aware of that. I also think it comes down to the fact that the same as in the Zlatan situation, he'll be conscious of chances created and the fact that his team has put him in some good positions. I think, you know, he identified that in quite a few of his post-match interviews. So it'll be interesting to see whether they switch things up too much or whether they just continue along roughly the same route. And I think they probably will go down a very similar route, to be honest.
Finally, let's end on Burnley 3, Palace 2, a roller coaster game, but it's now 4 straight defeats for Alan Pardew. Obviously feeling the pressure. Palace somewhat unlucky potentially, but it's never Pardew's fault, is it, Chris?
No, he blamed silly mistakes for the goals they conceded and said that they overcommitted on a set play to concede the final one. I think, watching the set play back, I think he's right to a degree. I'm not sure if they overcommitted as much as they were far too slow defending the counter-attack. So they've got their three midfielders lined up about 10-15 yards outside of the penalty box. And Burnley just play all three of them with one pass. And that's a little bit concerning. So I don't know if it's overcommitted as much as the way it was set up. Overall, they showed some flickers of what they can do. Townsend's hit the post. They did miss some good chances. Defensively, I still think they're a bit of a liability. They were against Liverpool as well. And I think that's what he needs to solve. I don't think necessarily the attacking issues are there for Palace personally. I think the issue remains the defence, and that for some reason he can't seem to find a balance between a side that attacks with vigour and energy and one that also defends well at the same time.
Yeah, 16 games without a clean sheet for Palace. So as you say, the defence, the obvious problem. A big win for Burnley though, up to ninth in the table. They're up to ninth in the table with 14 points. What's going on after? Three games on beat.
New thing we're trialing.
Two of them.
True statement.
Three games on beat. Two wins in their last three games for Burnley. Massive result. And they look much better equipped to deal with the rigours of the Premier League than they did in their last stint in the top flight. Gareth Southgate, of course, in attendance at this game for Burnley 3, Palace 2, which brings us nicely on to previewing the international break. The England squad has just been announced this evening. The big story, has to be said, is Jack Wilshere. Once again, a controversial inclusion. Dele Alli's injury, which he picked up this weekend, may have cleared the way for Jack Wilshere to make the team, Chris. But the selection has many people suggesting, once again, England players are picked on history rather than form. I mean, for you, do you think his performances warrant an inclusion this time?
I've not seen anything stand out, really. He's missed a few chances, I know that.
He's had some moment. He's had those flashes, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's had
the feeling that it's also
but he's
sort
so
of the,
brave,
maybe
Chris.
Maybe people surround him. He is
Jack
brave.
Wilshere's so brave going to Bournemouth.
I saw John Cross playing that. I don't think he's brave at all. I think he did what he had to do to save his career. Because if he was going to, he wasn't going to play at Arsenal.
I think he should have gone a bit outside his comfort zone. Instead of going to play one of his pals in Benicophobia, going to someone like Roma and learn under Spalletti would have been a clever thing.
I don't know if it would have been clever. It would have been brave.
It would have been more brave.
Like Joe Hart is.
So brave.
That's brave. I mean, again, the word brave has been given really strong emotional connotations there. But in terms of risk, then, that would be a risk to go to a country you've never been to before where you don't speak the language, where Ravel Morrison just went and has tanked. So you know that there's not a huge wealth of success in the modern era.
Just to play devil's advocate for a second, do you think... I mean, it's great to say he should have gone to Roma, should have played under Spalletti. We don't know if that option was there. Surely only Jack Wilshere could take the options presented to him, which we're assuming Eddie Howe, being a fan of Jack Wilshere, that was the option. I don't necessarily think it's brave to go there, but to criticise him for not taking a choice that perhaps wasn't open to him seems a little...
No, I just
unfair.
Think it being hailed as brave is a little bit misleading, because it's really not.
No, I agree with that.
It was a very common sense, or it was a very risk averse move, if anything.
In the sense, though, that you do only live once. I mean, there are elements of risk about it which ultimately allude to bravery. I mean, you know, it's not brave in the sense that a multimillionaire is moving somewhere, or a multimillionaire who seems to have sort of squandered that in the years gone by. But then, yeah, I think Chris is right. It sort of did force his hand.
Do you think, Dave, though, I know we're talking about the sort of hypotheticals about where he could have, couldn't gone, whether it's brave or not, which I think we can safely say it isn't, but in terms of those performances, do you think he deserves to be in the England squad anymore?
I don't think so, no. I think, you know, I just think that maybe Jack Wilshere needs to not be in the England squad and focus on playing his football again. Again, it's just a distraction. It's a distraction away from what he should be doing. That's, again, focusing on league football, because he's obviously not at the level he was. And he obviously needs to find the form and regain that. You know, he's not exactly lighting the world on fire at Bournemouth. So it's one of those things where it's just a bit of an odd inclusion. It's a very Gareth Southgate thing to do.
Although I don't quite know. I mean, I could paint the opposite picture maybe if you want. I don't quite know the circumstances under which he left Arsenal. We don't know if he was told, you know, you're not going to be in the plans and therefore you have to look somewhere else. We also don't know. I mean, I haven't looked into, and maybe it's worth looking into, what he has done at Bournemouth in terms of fitting into the system and how effective he is there. I think maybe certain people in the England setup also have faith in him as a footballer and maybe see him as a better footballer and maybe use him in a different way to the way that Bournemouth use him, deploy him in the way that he has been deployed for England when he got those Man of the Match performances. Having said that, you know the sentiment still goes somewhat towards what Dave and Chris were saying, which is a bit more it's Jack Wilshere. It feels like he squandered it. It feels so stereotypically recently English that you just sort of think, well, you've had the opportunity, you know, But then do you want to be that damning?
Really? Southgate himself said, Jack Wilshere is a player who we feel has a lot of class. It's good for him to get some 90 minutes under his belt again. And we felt the time was right to put him back in. He'll also explain more at a press conference on Monday morning. He's also going to talk about why Chris Smalling and Luke Shaw were absent. Looks like injuries. They sort of pulled out the squad before the Swansea game. Michael Keane's in there as well because of the absence of Chris Smalling, you'd assume. And Carl Walker's there at the moment, but he sort of looked like he picked up an injury in the North London derby, so he may not be there for very long. But an interesting squad, and we'll see how they get on against Scotland first, which I believe is on Friday night, the World Cup qualifier. And then they also have a friendly against Spain coming up. But we're going to talk more about that next week and next weekend before those games, of course.
That's not in Scotland, is it?
No, it's at Wembley.
It's at Wembley, yes. Yeah. Wow. So,
they're coming to our stomping ground, the little slugs.
I remember I went to see the last England-Scotland game when Ricky Lambert scored the winner. Seems like a long time ago.
That wasn't that long ago, though.
I know, but it seems like a lifetime ago. When that was Ricky Lambert game, was in the England squad. It was.
God,
it was
that really was. That was that when he... Yeah, that was. Those were the days, weren't they?
He used to work in an onion factory or pickle factory or something.
Yeah,
like
hey,
great guy.
Beetroot factory. Anyway, they lay the beetroot. It is also. I also find it weird how in one video we can sort of say or one any bit of coverage we say, yeah, they're coming to our home. You know, it's the best place to play. We can intimidate them there. And then the next thing we watch Spurs play there in the Champions League, and it's like, yeah, this isn't our home. We can't intimidate anyone here.
I just had a brainwave when you mentioned Ricky Lambert there. And David Moyes taking a tour of a factory.
Very good point.
What, do you think he was scouting for players? Is that what you're saying?
Potentially.
Yeah, yeah, he was also going around with Anna Chaby going, see that strong guy over there? Yeah, he could replace you.
Just throwing them a ball and seeing what they do.
That's actually really dangerous in the workplace.
We will be back unsafe. On Wednesday. Then.
You were definitely going to do an office joke there, weren't you?
Yeah, well, I literally just have deployed two.
Oh, office jokes.
Safe or unsafe.
Anyway, we'll be back on Wednesday to discuss and preview the international break, as well as do a bumper Q&A podcast. Because, you know, the international break, it isn't that fun for anyone. So do tune in then to get your questions in. Could be anything and anything. Get at us on Twitter at the front three. Get your questions in there. But until then, where can the listeners find you, Lawrence?
YouTube this week. We're editing lots of videos for you guys down on YouTube. There'll be a video with Jimmy Conrad, an exclusive video with Jimmy Conrad coming up later this week. Dave and I will be vlogging the shit out of football. That's actually what we should call the strand, vlogging the shit out of football. And if you haven't already seen our other vlog, go and see it there. Sure, the graphics are wrong, but the content is good.
Yeah. I'd love to.
And
vlog.
It floats in the air. There's no one else on YouTube who makes shit float on the air.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'd love to vlog the shit out of football, you know. Yeah,
Adam, do you want to vlog
anyway,
the shit
Dave,
out of football?
Where can the good people find you this week, Dave?
Well, also on the Front 3 YouTube channel. I think you should go and check that out. And there's going to be a tactics video on something.
Dave, will it just be you and I? Probably.
Yeah. And Chris, where can the whole find you?
BBC Radio 2.
Good.
Wow.
Well, this is fun.
Anyway, guys, follow me on Twitter at Adam Boltwood. But thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you again on Wednesday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.